Welcome to episode 12 of Open Source Underdogs, the podcast where we monitor the business world for new and exciting open source business models. Sean Porter is the creator of Sensu and is the co-founder and CTO of Sensu Inc. Sensu is an open source monitoring solution that watches your organization's servers, services, and applications. It has a huge community of contributors. It's used by thousands of companies. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about yourself. How did you arrive at Sensu?
So my background, my education is in information systems technology. And then I started my career actually working in an IT shop for insurance business. And from there, I just kind of got a feel for open source technologies and eventually found myself at a local Vancouver, Canada startup running perfume.com and cricket.com. And I actually migrated their services onto AWS back in 2008. And that gave me my first taste of good medicine. From there, I kind of just started to dabble in my own businesses. They were really focused around services and open source software and system administration. And then eventually I went through the cycle of joining a company, another startup, getting some more experience, then going to try my own thing, doing a consultancy. And eventually I arrived at a company called Sonian back in, I think, 2010, 2011. That was out of Boston. They were a e-discovery email archiving business. And they were running on multiple clouds at the time. My team of, I think at the time, was like four or five sysadmins. We had a few thousand EC2 instances and IBM Smart Cloud VMs and a whole mess of things. And we were managing that and we were fighting a lot of fires, and our monitoring and our signaling systems were just having too many problems in this, newfound world with ephemeral infrastructure and things of that sort. And really, we kind of looked on the landscape of, how can we improve our monitoring? How can we improve our telemetry collection so that we can cut down on this noise and, get a little bit more sleep and get back to improving how we deliver software? And there really wasn't much out there at the time that solved for our problems. So really, my friend Justin Kohlberg and I, we worked on an idea that I had on the weekend. And we really just threw together a very simple piece of software that would run service checks and collect metrics, but it used a PubSub model similar to some of the applications that we had at Sonian, and we deployed successfully onto these public clouds. So we kind of just modeled after that software, and then we tested it out, and lo and behold, it actually worked quite well. The signal-to-noise ratio improves. Management at Sonian, gave me 2 months of company time to further work on this tool and really, A/B tested against our existing technology stack. It just really, really stuck and, picked up some steam, and then got them to let me slap the MIT license on it and give it a name. And that's kind of the original origin story of Sensu, the open source monitoring tool.
Is Sonium still using it today?
It is, yeah. So Sonian, I think it was 2 years ago, around that time, got acquired by Barracuda. And what's funny, because Barracuda was also a user of Sensu, so it just like added to the the amount of Sensu it used there. So yeah, absolutely, they are still users today.
That sort of leads into my next question, which is what types of customers are using Sensu? I saw it said thousands of companies, but do you categorize or segment the types of customers at all?
Well, I mean, the way that we look at, our customer base is kind of falls into two funnels or two buckets. Like our website, you have the ability to come in and, you can get information on the documentation on the open source product, and you can use Sensu Core. Most of the majority of people come in that way. Some from the get-go will see that we have an enterprise version, and they'll see that there's a few features that differentiate it from the open source version, and they'll self-select and self-service themselves there. So they'll put in their credit card details, they'll get credentials for the enterprise version, and then they'll download it and use it. And then there's the other side, which is like the more traditional, enterprise sales cycle. Those businesses, larger corporations, that will take at least 90 days before they'll make a purchasing or even just an open source adoption path. So those ones, are typically, they fall into that other category, which require more you know, almost professional services, customer reliability support there. And that's kind of like a whole other segment for us. So you see a lot of fintech, a lot of large e-commerce business that falls into that category.
What's the value proposition, especially for Sensu Enterprise versus some of the other solutions out there?
So Sensu as a tool has always been about flexibility and integrating. So, you know, when you've got these larger organizations that are, you know, just starting or they're at the beginning of their, you know, DevOps transformations, and they're really looking at changing some of their own processes and changing some of the tooling to support that, and you have to make some big decisions. But Sensu is always about integrating with all those other tools, creating a full ecosystem. So I think that's always been one of Sensu's, you know, competitive advantages, in that you can choose your own time series database to store your data, and Sensu really doesn't care about that. You can choose your different mechanisms for notifications and alerting. Sensu doesn't really care about that. And I think that is very attractive for a lot of organizations. And then Enterprise just builds on top of that by giving more of a batteries included experience. You know, we kind of differentiate there on the integration side. So it gives you just more packaged there. So, and they're fully supported. So I can just drop Sensu in, and then I can effectively turn on the integrations for the other technologies I use in my organization.
Is it fair to say that Sensu is pursuing an open core business model?
Yes, that is our business model.
And how do you decide what features go into core versus what goes into enterprise? How do you prioritize?
So up to this point, a lot of that has been on the integration side. So integrations that are for more enterprise-y technologies. You know, a good example of that is just, you know, ServiceNow. So we have an enterprise integration for ServiceNow. There isn't a community version or variant of that integration. The community just hasn't had a need for it, so they haven't created it themselves. So I think that's one example of like integration. And then on the other side, which I think is more important, is around the permission model, wiring up like the role-based access control model with your existing directory services. So organizations of certain size, you know, they need to have a directory service for authentication and authorization, just for the number of people that work at the organization, and as well as just like features around, you know, collaboration and workflow, providing value in that sort of form.
How do you accomplish the two distributions? Are there different bits or different packages for the enterprise, and do you do license enforcement? How do you sort of manage having two different distributions?
This is what we do today and what we're planning to do. And I'll talk about both because I think it is interesting. So up to this point, we've had separate packages for the open core backend and the enterprise backend. And really, they're interchangeable. You can shut down the open core services and uninstall those packages, and then you can install enterprise and stand it up, and it'll simply just run the same configuration. So it makes it easy for users to try the enterprise version. And then if they choose that it doesn't bring the value they need, they can go back to the open core. And really the licensing enforcement around that is the honor system. You know, people, they come in, they sign up, and then they get a license that gives them the ability to monitor so many devices. And then it's up to them to really just be good citizens. And then if they need more seats or whatever, that they come back and they up their license. Of course, there's still interaction points, you know, with support that we can see, you know, how many devices they are monitoring and align that up with their license. And we can just be like, hey, you know, just so you know, you've exceeded your license. You should probably give us more money. So that's kind of what we do today. I mean, it's worked well enough. And I think as a small business that was growing rapidly, I think it was the right solution for us at the time. But now we've gone through the work over the last 18 months, 19 months of creating the next generation of the Sensu software. And we've rethought how we want to do the open core model and how we want to package it and how we want to license it. And we're actually releasing the general availability release at the end of this month for the new version, Sensu Go. Really, it's a single binary that we provide in our, you know, upstream packages. And that binary includes the enterprise features that are feature flagged and require a license file to unlock. So when even open source users are consuming the software from our repositories, they are getting the enterprise version. At least that code is there. It's simply not unlocked. If they use it, they're using the core feature set. And then if they choose not to go that path and not to use our official packages and not use our official binaries, the tooling is out there for them to build the fully 100% open core variant of that. So this is something completely new for us. And quite honestly, it is an experiment. I mean, maybe we can record another episode a year from now to see how it all worked out. But that's kind of the plan right now. And we're going to really see how that works over the coming months.
Can you talk about the range of how you work with customers? Do customers really ask you a lot of questions, or what do the customer relationships look like, or the range of customer relationships you see?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned range, because I think it's quite a large range or wide spectrum. I mean, yeah, at one end, you have people that download the open core, they use it, they upgrade self-service to enterprise, and we never hear a thing from them. Like they just use the software successfully. And then there's one step further, which is, you know, they might just have a very specific question like, hey, I'm monitoring over 10,000 servers. You know, how should I be configuring this feature or this particular parameter of my installation? And then at the other end of the spectrum, I mean, which I think falls into the category of like the enterprise customers, they're looking for a lot more involvement. They're like, okay, well, teach us how to use Sensu. So we do have training. So we do training for them. Okay, help us do a production deployment, like a POC. Okay, here's this effectively a statement of work. Let's go through this and deliver on all these things for you. And then on an ongoing basis, whenever they run into a problem, they come to us first. And I think in terms of like having a successful business, doing good customer success is like critical to Sensu's business in terms of generating revenue. Because I mean, when you look at our customer list, a majority of our revenues comes from that latter category, that end of the spectrum that requires higher touch.
How's it been getting renewals? I guess you're licensed, so that should drive the renewals automatically, one would think. But have you had any challenges around getting customers to renew?
Oddly enough, no. I mean, our churn rate is near 0%, and people, which proves that Sensu is extremely sticky. I think because Sensu is all about integrating with everything, and it kind of becomes this backbone of your monitoring and telemetry solution, that you know, once they adopt it and put it into place, there are few or no things that could possibly replace it. And because of that, you know, once they're a paying customer and it comes time to renew, they simply renew, or they realize that their license isn't good enough for the number of devices and they up it. So that's something that I'm happy to be surprised by.
One of the questions I'm always curious about is, how hard was it to figure out the right way to price the platform? And did you have to pivot at all on pricing, or were there challenges in figuring it out?
Well, first I'll say we're still figuring it out. and I think we'll always be figuring it out. You know, I think as the feature set kind of evolved and grew, we had more options in terms of how we were going to price it. I think for the longest time, we've kind of had to just use the crutch that is, you know, monitoring device count or node count. And obviously that doesn't really work in with, you know, today's infrastructure and applications, because that number is constantly changing. And we just kind of, again, lean on our other crutch, which is the honor system. We say, pay for a license for like the mid watermark for your infrastructure. If majority of the day you have 1,000 machines, get a license for 1,000 machines. But as the product has evolved and the feature set has evolved, we're now given more options in terms of how we can price. We can price around buckets of features, you know, ones that might only make sense for organizations of a certain size. Obviously, we can then charge more for that package. And we're continuing to evolve on this. I think even at the very beginning, where we look back, when we were a company of effectively like two full-time people working on this project, you know, we made a sell to a US bank for a perpetual license, and it had a whole bunch of zeros in it. We're like, this is amazing, you know, but then the reality set in that now we just sold a perpetual license. Now we have to focus around support around that particular customer in terms of generating further revenue. But I think that's just kind of one of the learning steps that you go through as a small business building around the open core model, and then coming to the realization that you'll always be changing your pricing model. You'll always be changing your feature set.
Yeah, at Glue, every time we thought we had it figured out, it'd be like another couple of months and we'd tweak it a little bit. I think we are still tweaking it, actually.
Same thing goes for your like messaging on your website, right? You're like, we've done it. We have the best way to talk about our product. And then like 2 months later, you're like, what did we do?
Yeah, agreed. Question about channels. You're still a relatively new company. I know channels take a long time to develop, but how has your experience been with developing channel partners, and where do you see that going in the future?
So, I mean, in terms of like partnerships in general, I think from the get-go, we focused on very like loose partner relationships to try to drive sales that way. So, you know, since it was designed to work in an environment with configuration management, so having good relationships with companies like Chef and Puppet and Ansible, more like technology partnerships that just kind of made sense from like a tool ecosystem point of view. So as companies were adopting, you know, a Chef or Puppet, they needed a monitoring tool that could work as fast as their automation tooling could. So that was part of our initial like biz dev and partnership efforts to align with that. And then as time progressed, you know, we became more global in terms of our user base and our customer base. So we needed more outreach overseas. So we have some partnerships with companies like there's one called Amazic, another one called Beacon. So they're over in Germany and the UK, just to give us boots on the ground overseas, as well as just another form of like a sales funnel through these partnerships. And then of course, we're still trying to figure out what does a reseller look like? What do OEMs look like for Sensu? I think we have a lot of work to do in that regard. But overall, like partnerships with Sensu and other companies have been a good source of generating customers.
Where is Sensu with regard to sales and marketing?
So majority of our sales are inbound. A lot of people just landing on the website or, you know, seeing some of our talks at events kind of thing and seeing Sensu in action or word of mouth. And then they're coming in and starting conversations with us. And we've just been working on scaling our sales organization to just deal with that amount of leads. But we are trying to evolve and create the, you know, marketing and sales machinery to be able to generate more leads and to start to be able to do more outreach, more outbound sales. But all that's still in flight and constantly changing. I feel like that is the most challenging problem to solve for right now is just messaging Sensu, getting Sensu in front of more eyes, and then working on converting those very raw leads into proper sales leads.
Can you describe the process for raising your Series A?
I think for it to make sense, I'll start at the very beginning. We were a company called Heavy Water Operations. We're a DevOps consultancy, a small team. And then we made the choice to kind of pivot to Sensu. But before doing that, we're actually trying to create another product, but we really couldn't get enough traction there. It was around software delivery pipelines, kind of like CI/CD stuff. And it really wasn't working for us. But on the side, you know, we always had a lot of business around Sensu. And my partner, Caleb, and I, we had the idea to just package it up and then create an enterprise version. And then we were able to actually sell it. And then we actually got that large perpetual license and a bunch of other good sales closed on that. And then we were basically able to validate the fit and the fact that organizations were hungry for a paid version of Sensu. So we knew we had something. That's when we pivoted to Sensu full time. And we were showing all the right signals. So we were growing at a good pace. The one thing we didn't have a problem with was hiring talent. Our team grew quite quickly. And it was time to raise our Series A. We gave ourselves 3 months. My partner, Caleb, and I, we did the typical roadshow. We traveled around just getting some FaceTime with a few VCs. And I think a month later, so only, I think it was like 4 to 5 weeks later, it was time to ink a deal. So we raised our Series A with Battery Ventures and Foundry re-upped again, as well as our angel investors. And I think we probably waited too long to start that process. Really, we should have started to work to raise our Series A sooner. But in the end, we ended up with a very favorable round for the company. I think giving yourselves more time so that you don't have the pressures of running out of money is always a good idea. So I think in hindsight, yeah, we would have started to raise sooner.
Do you think you could have bootstrapped it?
I think so. I think we could have bootstrapped it. Everything's always easier looking back, right? If I could go back in time and do things differently, I would go back to probably 2012 and I would just do Sensu full time then and really focus on just bootstrapping it, just staying super lean. And I think it would have been fine.
Was the team mostly people who were local, or were they people who were active in the community? Like, where'd you actually find the team?
It was a complete mix. People who I had worked with previously or we had known in the community. And then there was a good number of people who hadn't even used Sensu before. which I thought was really interesting. So when it came time to choose and grow our initial team, you know, it was like, okay, well, who do we know in the Sensu community that has contributed, that knows about Sensu and the value that it brings? Immediately went out and connected with those people. And as expected, it didn't take much to get them to join and come on board, which was really cool. And then as a completely 100% remote company, we do have an office or a studio in Portland, but no one works there. All 40 of us are all over North America. It really made it easy to find, you know, engineers and sales folks all over the place that just really believed in the product and understood the value that it brought.
All in the US though. Anybody overseas?
So a majority of our engineering team is actually in Canada. What's interesting when you're a fully remote company, and then I'm actually Canadian, I'm up in a city called Kamloops, BC, Canada, and we're fully remote and we have a Canadian subsidiary. But when you offer competitive salaries that are also well above usual Canadian market norms, you attract very talented engineers in Canada. And I think because of that, we ended up with a number of Canadians on our engineering team.
What do you think are the biggest challenges facing the founders of new open source startups?
I think the biggest challenges are, is your market, your market segment crowded? How do you differentiate yourself from everyone else in that space? And then how do you package a version of your software that you can generate revenue for? Or how do you become, you know, a software as a service provider that can't get Amazoned out? I think those are the biggest challenges. How do you provide value on top of the open core where people are going to pay you money for? Or how are you going to do something so unique from a software service point of view that somebody else larger than you can't just zap you out of existence by running your own software more effectively than you? I think those are the biggest challenges. And I think those ones are kind of the obvious ones.
Are you worried about that for Sensu?
The only case where it could affect us is if we chose to run a SaaS version of Sensu, if we start to generate more of a revenue from that. I think then we could become at risk of having that part of our business, having the rug pulled up from underneath us if a cloud provider decided to run a Sensu SaaS. I think then we would be at risk of losing part of our business or at least a revenue stream.
How often in the last 4 years or so have you considered launching a SaaS Sensu?
I mean, constantly. My background's in operations, and I understand what it takes to operate a hosted service and the costs associated with it. I think we've just, every time I'm like, ooh, we should totally do a Sensu SaaS. That would be really wicked. It would help people adopt Sensu, people start using it, lowers the barrier to entry considerably. But then the costs associated with operating that, the margin for generating revenue around that, you know, it's just, like, I feel like it's a whole other separate business than what we're focused on right now, which is how do we make Sensu easier to use so that it can be deployed on-prem without problem? We simply just avoid the cost of operating the hosted service. We'll continue to ask ourselves the question, do we run a SaaS every Monday morning? And then I suspect, you know, as it comes down the line, maybe one day we'll say, it's time, let's do it. I think if we were to do the SaaS thing, or at least build the company around it, we would have raised specifically to tackle that. And we would have built a different team, a different company in order to do that over the last 2 years. One thing I would like to point out is that we have gone on 1.x or 1.0 on Sensu for a number of years now. And Sensu Go is the next gen run. So if we did build a SaaS, it would be around our new technology. So if we were to do a SaaS, it would start after that goes fully GA, which is at the end of this month.
What does the long term look like for Sensu?
In terms of the technology, we're looking 5 to 10 years ahead, just trying to say, okay, like what are the general trends for the early adopters now? Because that's going to signal where the big ships are eventually going to turn to. So just making sure that Sensu from a technology perspective is aligned with that future. And I think we're thinking more ahead in terms of technology. In terms of the business and the product, it's much more short term, just seeing what works and what doesn't and making those changes as quickly as we can, experimenting. In that term, we're just talking like a few years. I just want to see company to continue on the growth rate that it has been experiencing and the adoption rate. If we stick to that, I think, you know, Sensu has a very bright future and you can see Sensu running on technology infrastructure and applications. a decade from now.
Do you have any advice for the entrepreneurs who are thinking about developing a business around an open source product?
I think the most important thing to first test in terms of building your career or a company around open source is to see what sort of people gravitate to the thing that you've created or the idea that you have, and to see what those people can do with it. I think that's an early indication of when you've hit on something that brings value to people's lives. If other people, strangers, are willing to download your obscure project and run it on infrastructure that runs a company that pays them their salary, I mean, I think that there's nothing better than that. It's pretty awesome. And to see if they start to, you know, kind of coalesce into a community, I think. If you've got the community around your obscure project, I think it's time for you to pour more of your heart and soul into that thing. If you're not seeing that happen, you know, maybe it doesn't make sense to focus all of your energies on that and try something else. And I would say that don't rush to raise venture capital around your open source project. See if you can bootstrap. See if you can get more traction without it. See if you can do it when you're a little bit more scrappy, when you can just focus on the technology, on the open source product, and less so on building a company and organization around it. I think you will be better off for doing it.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope that your listeners find this episode of use to them.
Special thanks to the Sensu team for arranging the interview. Transcription and episode audio can be found on opensourceunderdogs.com. Music from Broke for Free, Chris Zabriskie, and Lee Rosevier. Production assistance and transcription by Natalie Lau. Operational support from William Lau. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can say thanks by tweeting it out. Our podcast Twitter handle is @FossPodcast. That's FOSS Podcast. You can find out more about Sensu at sensu.io. Until next time, thanks for listening.